I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we hope to be talking about the Dakota Access Pipeline. Standing Rock protesters in North Dakota have been fighting the $3.8 billion pipeline, which is a 1,172-mile pipeline slated to carry crude oil from North Dakota to southern Illinois. The pipeline will transport 20 million gallons of crude oil every day. There are concerns that dozens of bodies of water could be threatened and that construction has already desecrated indigenous burial sites. The National Guard has destroyed teepees and sweat lodges. There have been dogs used against the protesters. The Sheriff's Department announced recently that it was charging one of the protesters with attempted murder after she allegedly fired three shots at officials last Thursday. The Standing Rock protest camp has been called the largest Native American protest in history. More than 500 Native tribes are there, and there, as of Sunday, have been 412 arrests since last August. There is currently a pause in the construction, but there is no indication how long that will last. There is a lot of concern, and you heard a news report about a pipeline bursting during the NPR news. There are charges that the Army Corps of Engineers never did a proper review of the environmental impact, and it did not adequately consult with the Standing Rock Sioux tribes. And if it did erupt, it would send oil into the Missouri River, which is the Standing Rock Sioux's biggest source of water, from bathing to drinking. And there have been a number of accidents involving oil and petroleum pipelines since 1995. The Obama administration has received letters, most recently from Senator Bernie Sanders, asking for them to immediately take action to stop this. And we are getting a change of guest here, so let me just figure out what's going on. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We hope soon to have with us Tara Hauska, who is the National Campaign Director for Honor the Earth, an environmental justice nonprofit. She is Kuching'chi First Nation and was Native American advisor to the Bernie Sanders campaign. We'll talk about Honor the Earth and the protest and how large this has become once we are able to secure her. We're going to start, though, with Aaron Wise of the International Indigenous Youth Council. And Aaron Wise, thank you very much for joining our conversation. Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thanks, Aaron. Let's talk about how large this has become. It's my understanding that there are people from hundreds of tribes who have come to this protest site, that it is the largest Native American demonstration really in history. Can you confirm that?
Yes, I can say that at this protection site, our demonstration has welcomed more than 300 of the 566 federally recognized tribes in the United States. We also have people here from across the globe, indigenous people that have come to us. We have people that have come to us from the Amazon. We have Maori that have come from New Zealand. We have people that have come from Australia, you know, First Nations people coming from Canada. It's really a miraculous thing to see and be a part of.
Mm-hmm. And where are you now? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm actually on Facebook Hill. That's what we call it. It's the media hill. It's the main point of signal that we get within the large camp, you know, Chetty Shikoing. Mm-hmm. It's the big camp that most people are most familiar with when they see the photos online.
Mm. And what is the current situation? Is there a pause in the construction because of the protests? What's happening with construction right now?
No, ma'am. They are continuing.
Oh, they are.
Construction day and night. Yes. Unfortunately, we can now see the pipeline from our camp after the 27th mass arrest and day of police brutality. We actually lost our North Camp enclosure that had been safeguarding the burial sites that had been dug up by Dakota Access, and we lost that space. So now they've come over the hill, and at night their lights bathe our campsite, so it's no longer dark at night. We can pretty much see everything going on because of the lights from Dakota Access being on.
Tell me when this became of concern, what the communication was with the U.S. government, whether or not there was communication about this pipeline and how it might affect drinking water, what the environmental impact might be, whether or not they were going to avoid burial grounds. What communication did you have and with whom about this whole construction?
Okay. Yeah, so the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Tribal Chairman Archambault II, he was actually in contact with the United States government, with the Army Corps of Engineers, and did request a full EIS, which is an environmental impact statement, per Dakota Access. He did get in touch with them and say, you know, we have not yet received our EIS for the lands that they are on. We were able to send out scouts that were able to identify historic effigies, burial sites, and locations, and we did mark them. And the next day, Dakota Access actually went in and started digging without permission. We have also been in touch with the Department of Justice trying to get them to assist us in our fight and our struggle to maintain these sacred burial grounds. But as of right now, we have not had anybody with power step in to put an end to this this digging that has occurred. Right now, they are waiting for the permit to get under the Cannonball River into Lake Oahe and the Missouri River, and they have not yet received that permit. We are still waiting on the Army Corps of Engineers to complete a full environmental impact statement.
That hasn't been done yet? It's supposed to go under the river and the environmental impact statement hasn't been done?
That is correct. And the same can be said for the Mississippi River. We did have a group of water protectors that were part of Mississippi Stand, and they were waiting for an EIS as well. And Dakota Access completed their horizontal directional drilling last week. The Mississippi Stand barricade did fall, and they were able to pull pipe underneath the Mississippi River as of last week.
Mm. What concerns you about the pipe going under the river?
The biggest concern is that pipelines have been historically known to spill. There hasn't been a time in place that we haven't heard of a pipeline spill. We've actually heard of several that happened over the summer. We heard of Yellowstone. We heard of Montana. Today there was a rupture in Alabama, a pipeline rupture. And the biggest issue is that the pipeline companies aren't going to be the first people to tell us that there has been a spill. Unless it is discovered, they have teams that are entirely devoted to covering up their tracks. We are more concerned about the water supply that affects 18 million people downstream. The Missouri River is the longest in the United States, the Mississippi comes in second to the Missouri, and all of the tributaries that are attached are affected if and when it breaks.
Mm. I have read, I think it was something from Bill McKibbins, that originally the pipeline was supposed to cross the Missouri north of Bismarck until people pointed out that if there was a leak there, it would threaten the drinking water supply for Bismarck, the North Dakota's second largest city. So they changed the crossing to just above the Standing Rock Reservation, where, as he says, the poverty rate is nearly three times the national average. Can you confirm that? Was that the plan originally, and then they moved it to the reservation?
Yes, that was the plan originally. The people of Bismarck actually decried the route of the pipeline, saying that they were afraid that it would affect their drinking water supply, so they decided to move it to the reservation. As most people, I'm sure, are aware, Indigenous people are not recognized in the United States, and we do not often have a say in what is done to us. We have not for the last several hundred years that this country has been here, and we've been fighting, you know, diligently against the people that have continually been oppressing us since the founding of America. So right now we're working against the pipeline that was supposed to be routed through Bismarck. That is a correct statement, and is now being pushed through the reservation, because if it's out of sight, it's out of mind for most people that don't have to deal with Indigenous communities on a daily basis.
Tell me what you've encountered. We've read reports and seen footage of the National Guard with tear gas destroying teepees. 400 people, I think, have been arrested since Monday. What have you encountered?
I've encountered, on behalf of the youth council, almost all of our youth council have been maced. They've been tear gassed. They've been shot with beanbag guns. They've also had sound cannons, percussion grenades thrown at them. My own sister, Lauren Howland, she had her wrist broken on the 27th by an officer with a baton. And on the 27th, the same officer again grabbed her wrist and twisted it, breaking it again. And when I was on the front lines with all of the youth council, I asked the police officers which one had hurt my sister. My sister pointed him out, and I said, "Were you the one that hurt my sister?" He pulled down his ski mask and smirked at me and then put it back over his mouth. We are dealing with people who do not see us as their equals. They do not see us as their peers, and I don't even think that they fully see us as fellow human beings. We're out here with people who are hired guns, who are, you know, the good old boys that are here to, you know, make sure that those Indians stay in their place. And, you know, the biggest thing that we deal with on a daily basis is the fact that mainstream media is not conducting a narrative based on Native Americans here. They are constructing the narrative based on the people that are surrounding these areas. And so we do have, you know, the sheriffs that get on the loudspeakers that say, "Please don't shoot, you know, your bows and arrows at us, and, you know, stop, you know, raising those guns," but none of us have any weapons whatsoever. We're not allowed. And per our elders, who are deeply revered here, and per the youth who started this movement, we are not allowed to have any weapons in camp whatsoever. Each vehicle is checked before it's allowed to enter camp, and everyone on the front lines is checked before they're allowed to walk up to make sure that they are not carrying anything that could be harmful to the group as a whole.
So what do you make of this report that we received today, the Morton County Sheriff's Department announcing today that it was charging one of the protesters with attempted murder of law enforcement after she allegedly fired 3 shots at officials last Thursday? She has not yet entered a plea. Have you heard of that story?
Yes, and I know who she is. Our youth council is very close to her. Her name is Red Fawn Fallis. She is a woman that comes and brings us supplies. She brings us gas money. She's kind of like, I'm the youth council mom, and she kind of moms me to make sure that I'm taking care of myself. She comes in, and she makes sure that we are all, you know, doing our self-care, that we're eating, that we're drinking water, that we have all the supplies that we need on a daily basis. And when we all saw the photos of Red Fawn, we all started crying collectively because she's a really wonderful woman, and we're scared that they're going to make her into the next Leonard Peltier. We were on the front lines with her that day. She has a four-wheeler that she uses to pull people out of the battlefield, essentially. She took my sister out when my sister's wrist was broken again, and another girl who broke her ankle trying to run away from the police. And she's being targeted 100% as far as we're concerned, because she is such an integral part of this movement. The photo that you can see, it looks like they've sedated her or maybe given her something. She does not look like herself. She's a very beautiful woman, very sweet, and she, you know, of all people, she runs a camp that's consisted of mainly elders and women. And so I'm sure that all of those elders are, you know, deeply concerned right now, because the person that's been their primary caretaker for the last 7 months is absent and being charged with attempted murder with a weapon that she 100% undoubtedly did not have.
Well, we'll have to follow that story. The other amazing thing that happened, and I don't know if you saw this when it happened, maybe you did, were the pictures that we've been seeing of the thousands of buffalo that arrived on October 27 over a hill, and the buffalo are of great significance to Native Americans. Were you there when that happened? What did that signify? It was quite a sight.
Yeah, I was there. We were all walking. Some of our brothers and sisters were already headed to the front lines, and I can't even describe to you the feeling of the earth shaking beneath us. And all of us, you know, immediately thought, you know, is there an earthquake, or is, you know, did our prayers finally, you know, like, push this pipeline out of the earth? And we didn't know what to expect. And then all of a sudden, the Tatanka Yate, our buffalo family, came, you know, rolling over the hills, and it was just as if all of our ancestors were coming collectively to tell us that we were going to be okay, and that our prayers were being listened to. These buffalo came of their own accord, and we had some of our Horse Nation riders that actually went out to corral them to make sure that they didn't come run into people. but these buffalo came riding over the hill on their own, and it was the most miraculous sight, especially considering the mass murder that took place in the 1800s of our buffalo. So to see them not only alive and thriving, but to show up for us when we needed the most beautiful event.
Let's welcome phone calls for you. We'll take them in a moment. Erin Wise of the International Indigenous Youth Council is with us, and she is at the camp. And we're welcoming phone calls for her about, about how long this protest is, what it's over, what response they've had from the federal government, the pause in the construction under the river right now of the pipeline, but other construction is continuing. The Standing Rock Protest Camp, the largest Native American protest in history. Over 400 Native tribes are there. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Erin is at the camp and is part of the protest. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls for Erin Wise. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. She is with the International Indigenous Youth Council. She is at the Standing Rock Protest Camp. Richard in Fort Atkinson is our first caller for you. Erin, hi, Richard. Yeah, hi, Richard.
Thank you. The attack upon the protesters by the police and military, the arrest of many, destruction of shelters, that's all yet another outrage of the continuing white genocidal behavior toward our indigenous peoples. The disgusting cover-up by the mainstream media. I think an intervention by either Hillary Clinton or President Obama would surely change the dynamics of the tragedy and offer some protection to Native Americans. They have every right to make a protest against that pipeline. They seek protection of the environment and of the ancient burial sites. The United Nations has taken a position against their white brutality. Bernie Sanders has made frequent pleas to the president and the government to intervene. But there's been cowardly silence by the Obama government and from Hillary Clinton, just indifference from them. The Obama government and the Democrat Party and Hillary give us lots of talk about fighting racism, about inclusion, fairness to all peoples, environmental protection, right to fight against economic inequality, but no action. And we, the American people, have murdered almost all of this continent's indigenous peoples, and we continue over the years to brutalize those few who remain. No one expects Trump to take an interest, but where is the action based upon all that rhetoric at the Democrat convention?
Well, evidently, Standing Rock Youth descended on the Brooklyn headquarters of Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton. I think this was yesterday or the day before. She did release a short statement and said she believed all voices should be heard and all views considered in federal infrastructure projects. And there have also been reports that Donald Trump has close financial ties to the pipeline operator. Is that response from Hillary Clinton encouraging, sufficient, Erin?
No, absolutely not. And our youth council have actually talked with the youth that went to Brooklyn. Some of those are members of our youth council as well. And we are aware that President Obama does work closely with Warren Buffett, who stood to benefit from the Dakota Access Pipeline via his railway. We also realize that Hillary Clinton is standing to benefit from many of her donors benefiting from this pipeline as well. So it's not sufficient. What would be sufficient would be people coming in here, people with power saying no more. So we are going to stop this pipeline, and we're not going to wait for one of your youth or one of your brothers and sisters to die before we decide to intervene. We are already on the front lines. We are already, as the guest just said, this is a continuation of the genocide that was committed over 500 years ago. And we are aware of that as youth. We are aware of that as a camp as a whole. And the lack of talk from Hillary Clinton's camp and from President Obama, who has actually been to Standing Rock Reservation and met these people here fighting for their water in person, the lack of support from them is not sufficient, and her statement was not sufficient.
Are you encouraged, however, President Obama did eventually pull the plug on the Keystone Pipeline?
Yeah, he did. After 4 years and many arrests, it wasn't nearly as violent as this demonstration has been, given the local law enforcement. And my concern is that President Obama isn't going to step in until somebody dies or until somebody is severely injured. We already have several people that have been severely injured, my sister, as I mentioned, included. And, you know, I just fear that when he decides to do something, it'll only be after we've experienced great loss, a greater loss than we're already experiencing at present.
Let's go to Nick in Madison. Hello, Nick.
Hi, I hope I can get all this in. There's a lot. I actually visited there from Madison. I drove 12 hours each way. I wasn't sure where I was going about 6 weeks, 8 weeks ago. Arrived there in the midnight in the pitch dark. And they took me into their teepee and fed me and taught me how to pray. And they're just the most beautiful people in the world. I think this would be politically a great move for President Obama and Hillary to show the people that the president, the government, can get something done with a week to go before this monumental election. It's not right for people like myself who, if I had more money and time, I would go back there. And I don't think I would get myself killed, but I would get myself arrested, and that might be a problem for me. Is that my job as an American citizen? The government can't step in. That land belongs to them from the 1851 treaty. It was supposed to go north. They didn't want it there. So what's the problem, President Obama, Hillary Clinton? You might win this election by doing this within the next few days.
Aaron.
Yes. Thank you, first of all, for coming to the camp. We really appreciate your support, and I'm glad that you enjoyed your time here. As I said, we are a peaceful, prayerful people, and we are waiting on our president, the president that we voted in. I personally voted in 2 terms, and before my mom passed away, you know, she had only good things to say about President Obama and would continually say, you know, if you need something, look to our president because he's a great leader. And we believed him. We believed all of our, you know, elders and all of our mothers and fathers when they said that President Obama was here to protect us because he was the first president that built a Native American platform. Now I'm kind of lamenting the fact that I voted for him because I feel deceived. Many people here feel deceived, and we all kind of wish that we were going to get Bernie Sanders back because he actually came to the site, saw what was happening, and made it a point to address many of the issues that plague Native America today.
Mm-hmm. And with other Democratic senators, 4 of them, I think, wrote a letter to President Obama on this very
issue. And no official response was received.
Yeah. The pipeline company says, let's hear what you think about this, that it really is far safer to move oil and natural gas in this underground pipe than in rail cars or in trucks, which can crash and create huge fires.
I think that there's something to be said for the fact that they don't want us to see how much oil they're actually moving. I think that the extraction of fossil fuels is an industry that is dying slowly and also that doesn't need to be depended on anymore. For them to say that it's safer for us to transport oil by pipe versus by rail or by truck, I think the only reason they're saying that is because they don't want us to know exactly how much they're digging out of the earth, how much they're taking from our mother. And if they are in trouble or if a vehicle does wreck, they don't want to be held accountable because it's a pipeline. You cannot see how much damage is being done, whereas if it's a truck or a rail car, you can see exactly how much oil is being spilled and how much damage it does to the environment surrounding it.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. We're on Facebook where you can leave messages, and that's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter. We're speaking with Erin Wise of the International Indigenous Youth Council. She is in the protest camp at Standing Rock, and we go to Deb in Menominee next. Hello, Deb.
Hello. Erin, I just want to thank you so much and the entire Sioux Nation and all the other nations for standing up to the big oil companies. And I see this as the Lakota and all the other nations as teaching us white people how to live in harmony with the earth. And I am so very, very grateful for all these teachings. We have a group here in the Chippewa Valley in Wisconsin. We do whatever we can. We're sending out supplies, donations. Some of our members have gone out there and stood with you. And my comment here is that we really need to get off of fossil fuels. We have the technology, and we can do it right now. It just needs to be transitioned, and we need to have done it, like, you know, 10 years ago. So thank you. Thank you for all your work.
Thank you so much for saying so, and thank you again for sending people out here, and thank you for donating your supplies and your time and your love. We really appreciate it, and I can't say enough how many times, you know, as a youth council, just our small little youth council, we sit and we cry when we realize how many people are out there supporting us, because here in the state of North Dakota, not a lot of people are nice to us. We go places and people make comments. They call us a lot of different really obscene names. So that love that comes, you know, that's being sent to us by mail or people making donations really does make a difference and helps us remember our purpose as to why we're here.
Hmm. What's the ultimate goal, Erin? What do you want to have happen right now?
The ultimate goal is to stop the pipeline and to protect the water. Long term, I think that we would like to establish that, you know, Indigenous people are here. They have always been here. And though America seems hell-bent on pretending that, you know, the atrocities that have happened to our people did not happen and seem hell-bent on rewriting our history, you know, my ultimate goal personally and, you know, of the goals of many of the youth I work with is that people start remembering who we are and that we are still here. We are not characters in a, you know, story or in a movie plot line. We're not mascots. We are not, you know, to be rewritten as though we are these angry warrior people that, you know, are only here to hurt and harm white people. That's not our goal whatsoever. We're just here to remind people that we have a job as, you know, First Nations people, as Earth Guardians, as, you know, protectors of this earth, and our only job is to make sure that our mother is taken care of for future generations. Our goal is to take care of the next 7 generations down the line and to think about all the children that aren't here yet, think about all the unborn, and make sure that they are protected as well.
Thanks, Deb, for your call. Brian in Beaver Dam, hi.
Well, hi, and thank you for everything you're doing out there and standing and protecting our resources. I'm Stockbridge Muncie, and I'm a sun dancer. I've been out to the knee sun dancing, and some of our sun dance elders are out there standing with you. If you happen to find Donovan, say hi to him.
Uh-huh.
My question is, has the Army Corps of Engineers given us a deadline for their environmental impact?
No, they have not, and we keep requesting that they release an EIS to us, that they take the time, that they pause construction. And we thought when the court ruled to give us, you know, the 20-mile buffer between where the construction was and the river, that we were going to have time and that the Army Corps of Engineers was going to step in and complete an EIS. That buffer was lifted when the injunction was lifted, and now they're, you know, just over the hill. So, no, to answer your question, they have not completed a statement. They haven't even alluded to the fact that they intend to complete one. We're pretty much, aside from the people listening and the people that visit, we're pretty much alone out here.
So there's no way to force them to give us a deadline.
Yeah, there's unfortunately no way to force them to do anything. All the statements that are even coming out of the Department of Justice are asking the Army Corps of Engineers to, quote, voluntarily give up their permits. Then they are very careful with their verbiage when they say voluntarily. They're not telling them that they need to leave or that they need to do anything. They're telling them that they would like them to, but it is not required.
Thank you again for your time, and thank you for your answer. That clears a few things up for us.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you for your prayers, brother.
What is the National Guard presence there now?
Initially, the National Guard presence was just to assist the local law enforcement with the blockade that they had set up on northbound Highway 1806. Now, the National Guard have, as of the 27th, begun assisting the police with arrests and with entering camps. Initially, I think many of us thought, you know, well, the National Guard is here, and that's not much better, but at least someone's watching Morton County and making sure that they aren't doing anything insanely malicious or violent to us. And on the 27th, I think the blinders were kind of lifted off of our eyes as far as the National Guard was concerned when we realized that they were helping Morton County and that no one was here to protect us.
Thanks, Brian, for the call. Laura in Superior. Hi, Laura.
Hi. This whole situation is so outrageous. I just felt I had to call in, and I think everyone that's called has given wonderful affirmation to what you're trying to do out there, Aaron. And I'm really encouraged that the youth are so involved in this movement because they're the future. And I want to encourage you to keep up the protest because there's many, many examples of Native people putting a stop to things that are bad for the environment, bad for them. And I'm somewhat familiar with the situation in Crandon, Wisconsin, where Native and local people were actually able to stop the mining that was proposed to come in there. What I would like to know is how can some of us that can't come out there help you from wherever we are?
Well, first and foremost, I would say that if you could lift up a prayer for us, that is the most helpful. We did start this camp as a prayer camp, and all of us are praying daily, constantly. Actually, our youth council prays multiple times together as a group per day. So if you cannot, you know, join us here, please, please say a prayer. Please encourage other people to pray. We have people from all religions here that have acknowledged, you know, that we, you know, though we may be different, we all join together in prayer. And it's the biggest thing I can say is just continue to pray. We also need constant support for our legal funds and for our just general supplies funds. We're trying to prepare for winter. I've been told that it's going to get to negative, 40 here with wind chill.
Oh.
I grew up in Minneapolis, but I think I'm still ill-prepared for the weather here. So if you would like to make donations, heading to sacredstonecamp.org/FAQ. There is a link to the general resources fund. There's also a link to the PayPal if you would like to donate that way. For the youth council, we have a GoFundMe. It's gofundme.com/no-DAPL-winter. That is specifically for the youth council. Many of the funds that we've received were intended for winterization and have been used to bail out our water protectors, our brothers and sisters that have been arrested. And also you can visit on Facebook Red Warrior Camp. They are our toughest allies. They are the people that are their last standing to make sure that, you know, nothing comes to harm the people in the camps. And if you find Red Warrior Camp on Facebook, they have donation links as well. I just don't have them off the top of my head.
How long do you expect to be there, Erin?
Well, when I came, I thought I was going to be here for a week, and I was so moved by the people and the prayer that I extended my stay for another week, and now I intend to be here through the winter. I intend to be here as long as it takes to stop the pipeline, and if that means, you know, giving up my body and laying my life down on the line, then I guess you can bury my heart here in Standing Rock.
Really?
Yeah. I can speak on behalf of all of our youth. They would say the same thing, which is why I continually ask people to come support us and to call the representatives, call Governor Jack Dalrymple, call the White House, because I don't need kids to martyr themselves for water, especially when the water that the police are going to be using to wash off their hands is the water that we're fighting for. You know, the blood that's on their hands right now and whatever water they use to wash it off is the water that we're fighting for. So if you want to support us, you know, pray for all the water protectors, and especially just think of the youth council. Their kids out on the front lines that want to make sure that their kids, you know, have water, and I want them to have the opportunity to have children.
Do you believe that you've been able to change any hearts and minds?
I think that we've changed a lot of hearts and minds in the broader spectrum of things outside of the state of North Dakota. Within North Dakota, I feel like it's moving a little bit slower. We did see a lot of Halloween costumes that were being posted online of people in Mandan and Bismarck dressed as Indians and all holding signs that said water protectors or hashtag no dapple. So I feel like the ignorance here is a little more widespread than that of the rest of the country. So we're taking baby steps, and we pray for the people that mock us and that think what we're doing is funny, because we know that they didn't want it in their water. So, you know, we're just trying to do the same thing, and we just happen to gain, I guess, some modicum of national attention for doing so.
Thanks very much for the call, Laura. We go to Josh in Park Falls next. Hi, Josh.
Hi. I would just like to comment that the pipeline is per gallon safer than cars or trucks, which, especially in the news over the past few years, have gotten involved in a lot of wrecks spilling oil into rivers and things, the exact kind of things she's talking about. And that's equally as hard to collect and secure, and it's not really heightened anything. It's got to pop out of the ground somewhere else and be refined and be counted for tax purposes and all that. It's not like they're gonna be pulling a rabbit out of their hat and getting away with anything like that. That'd be safer for our water than having it trucked and trained in.
Aaron, what do you say?
So just to clarify, I'm sorry, it's a little bit loud on my end. He thinks that it's safer for a pipeline than it is for a truck or a train?
Yes.
Okay. I guess to that, I would just say that I humbly disagree. As I said, you know, if you think that a truck or a train is going to, you know, crash and, you know, potentially hurt our river, then why is it safer for us to put a pipeline that crosses four states under the largest water supplies in the United States? I don't understand, I guess, where that logic comes into play, especially given that there are pipeline accidents and pipeline spills that we hear of daily all across the globe. I guess I just disagree.
In the letter Senator Bernie Sanders sent to President Obama, he talked about the first priority must be protecting the safety of the peaceful protesters. Do you feel as though your safety is being protected, Aaron, or do you feel you're in a world of danger?
I feel very much that we are not protected. The only people here that I know are protecting me are my fellow water protectors. Like I said earlier, I watched the police officer that broke my sister's wrist remove his ski mask, smirk at me when I called him out for hurting my sister, and then put his mask back up. They are unrelenting. When we go into public spaces, there was a fire that was actually set, and we believe that it was set by Dakota Access across from the camp. The fire that was set, we had the Bureau of Indian Affairs Forestry Service up on the hill. They were ready to put out the fire, and they were pulled back by the state of North Dakota and told that until they had explicit permission from Morton County to put out the fire, that they were not allowed to be there. We called 911 multiple times and asked why no firefighters had arrived, why no ambulances had arrived, and were continually laughed at or hung up on. I don't feel safe. There are helicopters and planes flying over camp as I speak right now that monitor us day and night. We have mercenaries that are visible on the hills that are completely fully armed. They look like they belong in a video game. They look like black ops operators. Mm-hmm. And they're standing on the hills watching us with dogs, watching us with guns. And no, I do not feel safe. The only reason I feel safe is because I know that Takashla, you know, that our creator is greater than any powers here on earth, and our foremothers and our ancestors are greater than any powers here on earth. So if anything is to happen, they're my first line of defense, and I don't feel safe, but I know that they're there. So that is comforting in some sense.
Aaron Wise is with us this hour with the International Indigenous Youth Council, and we're welcoming phone calls for her. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that is at Kay Dunn Show. She's talking to us from the camp in North Dakota this hour of the show, and we'll take more phone calls momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls. Annie in Watertown is next for you, Erin. Hi, Annie.
Hi. This just seems to be a symptom of our greater, I think, moral decay of and killing ourselves for oil. It seemed to be the consensus not that long ago that what had happened with the Native American people in this country was wrong and we should be ashamed and everything. But now we've sort of tossed it out, and even in Wisconsin, how our legislature didn't follow the respect for the tribes and the treaties by consulting with the tribes about the mining stuff, and this is going on now again in northern Wisconsin. But the fossil fuel corporations know they've got to be on their way out, and there's just such a rush for all these pipelines, and then they can say, oh, well, but we have all this infrastructure. And also, I think with the Gulf Horizon disaster proved, they've done much, much advancement in how to find and extract their product, but they've done nothing. There was no progress from the Alaska disaster to the Horizon Point in how to clean up messes. They don't care about that, and we give them a free ride.
Erin.
Yeah. Hi, Annie. I agree with you. When you say that, I definitely feel that from a personal perspective as an Indigenous woman, I feel that my entire life has actually been a political statement saying that, you know, I'm existing in spite of everything that has been done to my people to try and make sure that we are no longer active, that we no longer have our languages, and that we exist in general. I do think that there hasn't been a time in my life that I've seen where people have cared about Native Americans. So right now, to be a part of this movement, and have people, you know, saying, hey, maybe we should listen to them, is an incredible thing. One of the things that we continually hear from people locally and, you know, I guess internationally is that, you know, or I'm sorry, not internationally, nationally, is that, you know, people say, well, my family's been here for five generations. I'm born and bred. You know, this is my home. Well, you know, that may be the case, and I understand why a lot of people say that, but it's our home, first and foremost. We are the first people of this land. And I don't think that people really understand how much we have suffered the historical trauma that has been incurred, you know, through all the boarding schools and the mass removal and the Indian Removal Act and, you know, Kill the Indian, Save the Man, Manifest Destiny. I don't think people really realize how much we're up against internally as well as externally. And right now our big struggle is to, you know, stop this pipeline. And I agree with you when you say that the fossil fuels industry is dying. We know that it is dying. And I think that's why they're becoming more and more aggressive about how they proceed with laying these pipelines. I 100% agree with you in that sense.
Do you know what kind of legal recourse you have here? Is there a dispute about tribal lands and how much of this pipeline might be on tribal lands or on water that will be used for people who live on the reservation? What's the legal recourse, Erin?
So we have the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is working with the Department of Justice to go over how much of this is treaty land, how much of it is backed by the 1851 Fort Laramie Treaty, how much is backed by the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. We have a lot of people and a whole mass of legal, you know, lawyers and, you know, people that are willing to, you know, write on our behalf. We have a lot of people that are here, and we have actually created statements, you know, with our tribe declaring eminent domain, with them saying, you know, this is our land and we are, you know, taking it back. And it doesn't seem to have much effect or impact on the mass audience or on the United States government or even, you know, the state of North Dakota. It doesn't, like I said, people don't really know that we're here and they don't care. So we, you know, a lot of the things that we say, even if it's presented in the legal way, even if there is documentation provided, you know, it goes in one ear and out the other.
Hmm. There have been some news reports. I've certainly seen what's going on the nightly news nationally. When you say there, people don't know you're there, there hasn't been a whole lot of coverage, or what's your analysis of press coverage?
We're on, actually, today is the anniversary of the 7 months that we've been here fighting, and it's also the beginning of Native American Heritage Month. And up until probably, I want to say, mid-October, when the police became more militarized and aggressive and began brutally attacking our people, we weren't seeing mainstream media coverage. It was mostly Facebook live streams. It was mostly Native media that was covering what was happening and visitors that were bearing witness to what was happening. And I definitely, when I say that people don't realize that we're here, I'm not talking about Standing Rock. I'm talking about in the United States in general.
I see.
I think for people to, drive to a casino or drive through a reservation and pick up a pack of cigarettes without paying taxes. But they don't really think about the fact that they are in an indigenous community. And as far as mainstream media coverage is concerned, there are people that are starting to come, but it's only now that there has been bloodshed, only now that people are getting hurt. And like I said before, that I think that that's the only time that President Obama will step in is when things get really, really bloody and gory.
Annie, thanks for your call. Derek in Appleton, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to express...
I can't hear you very well. Derek, can you get closer to the phone, or you're kind of distant here? Hello?
Yeah.
There you go.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you better now. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say that it just seems like there's a lot of disinformation, misinformation out there, and there's a lot of recorded, meetings, and, I mean, with the injunction having been denied in the 58 pages in there, that there seems to be, to me at least, that there's been plenty opportunity for the Standing Rock tribe to voice their concerns about the pipeline. And, let's keep in mind, there's 8 other pipelines crossing that river right now. And on top of it, I mean, the water, I understand it. I truly am an apologist. I'm a 16th Indian myself. However, for people to lay down their lives for this seems a little extreme, especially given from what I can see from the facts from the injunction and reading that the Standing Rock tribe of the 58 tribes consulted on this project, were the one that seemed to just be balking at every opportunity to have their voice heard up until, the pipeline encroached on their reservation.
Aaron.
So I guess to that, I would say if you think that it's a little, ridiculous that we're willing to lay down our lives for this water, I would ask how many troops we send overseas every single day to fight wars that aren't ours to protect this country. Why are they willing to give up their lives? They're protecting the land and liberty and freedom of the American people. I don't feel that it's any different for us. Our job is to protect this land and our people. And as far as saying that we have bulked at the opportunity to protect our land prior to it coming onto our reservation, I would disagree. As I've said repeatedly, people do not pay attention to the things that we say. We have been repeatedly ignored historically. Our documentation aren't even, the correct history is not even being told in classrooms right now. So I would not fault you at all for believing that we are missing opportunities or thinking that, it's crazy for us to lay down our lives because you don't know our struggles up until this point. I would encourage you, if you would like, to read a book called Genocide of the Mind, maybe Lies My Teacher Told Me, and learn a little bit more about Indigenous peoples here prior to making broad statements saying that we haven't done what it is we need to do to protect this land prior to it invading our reservations, because if it was just us having this issue right now, then why did more than 400 of the 566 federally recognized tribes show up to help? It's because we're all experiencing these issues nationally and internationally. All I can say is that if it's ridiculous to you, then it's good that you're not here, because for the people that are here, it's not ridiculous. It's a life or death situation.
Hmm. And unfortunately, he made other comments I wanted to make you comment on, but we don't have enough time. Aaron, thank you very much for being with us, Aaron Wise. I appreciate all of your time, and you're bringing attention to a whole host of issues. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Remember us out here.
Erin Wise, International Indigenous Youth Council, we thank her for being with us. She is at the Standing Rock Protest Camp, has been there for about a month and plans to be there for the winter. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this show and to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks for your calls, everybody. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get to all of them, but we had many of them this hour. Please join us tomorrow. We're going to be talking about unequal school funding, the second hour. Why do some districts get a whole lot more money than others, and what does it mean for education of all? We'll talk about that tomorrow during this hour. Thank you for listening.